This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who tucks Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Talamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, where each and every Tuesday evening we have the opportunity to take you inside the lives and careers and discuss some of the greatest moments in the history of thoroughbred racing, and we do it through the eyes of the jockeys. And happy to have you with us at horseracingradio.net, everybody joining us worldwide on our website. Mike Penna, Christina McManigal, our producer Lee Delapina, we are with you in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. And Christina, this is a show that we are now embarking upon our third week, and I don't know if I could have come up with a better scenario for the way this show has begun. We kicked it off 2 weeks ago with Hall of Famer Mike Smith. Last week, we had a visit with Hall of Famer Chris McCarron. And the things that they told us, and listening to their stories, I think you would agree, as a jockey yourself, absolutely remarkable.
Oh, it's incredible to listen to their stories, and as Chris said last week, to be in the presence of such royalty. But no, I get caught up in their stories, and I forget I'm supposed to ask questions.
I think Chris was more taken with you than he was with the fact that he was appearing on the show here. He wanted to interview you and ask you a bunch of questions.
We had a good time.
Yeah, it's going to be great. We're going to have an unbelievable time for you over the course of the next hour as we welcome yet another Hall of Famer to Jock Talk tonight. It is John Velasquez, the 43-year-old native of Puerto Rico. 5,254 career wins to his credit. That career still ongoing and going very strong. He has earned more purse money than any other rider in history, with earnings in excess of $318 million. In both 2004 and 2005, he received an Eclipse Award as the nation's outstanding jockey. He was inducted into racing's Hall of Fame in 2012, the year after he won his first Kentucky Derby, guiding Animal Kingdom to victory beneath the Twin Spires. And Johnny V is with us now on Jock Talk. Johnny, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, happy to have you with us. And boy, you hear me run through some of those numbers and walk back through your resume, so to speak. And it's been quite a journey, my friend.
Yeah, it makes me feel very old.
Come on, we're both the same age. 43 is not old.
Yeah, it makes me feel like I'm Asian. It's only like that, you know, something like it. It's been a long time, so it's definitely a great career so far. So I've been enjoying it, definitely.
I know that most jockeys and most trainers that we interview on this show that are as accomplished as you are would never believe that they'd be in this position when they first started out. So let's go back to the beginning. Growing up in Puerto Rico, how was Johnny V first introduced to thoroughbred racing?
It was kind of a strange thing because I didn't have Holland. Sorry, guys. I didn't have any family or anybody involved in horse racing. So, but I did grow up around horses, which that was the passion, riding the horses. But it's basically street horses or pony, if you will, you know. And that's where I grew up in, and had that passion and riding the horses until I met a jockey in Puerto Rico, Julio Garcia, and that kind of started kind of hitting. And thinking about, you know, being a jockey, you know, I was 14 years old then, and I was trying to find information about the jockey school they had in Puerto Rico and how you become a jockey and all this stuff. And finally, I did find someone who knew about it. And it's funny because I wanted to try to get into the school at that point when I was 14 years old. And then we got all the information. It's like you have to wait until you're 16 years old to get into the school. So I had to wait 2 years. 2 years, then it was 2 years waiting. That you never know if you're going to actually get in. Actually, I didn't have anybody or any family or friends who knew about the racetrack. And finally, I found someone through my uncle, and he was a jockey agent, a very good jockey agent in Puerto Rico, and got me into the school.
Johnny, tell us about that Puerto Rican jockey school, and what did you start out doing? Did you start out mucking stalls and grooming horses, and how long did it take you to get comfortable around the horses?
You know, it's very funny because they're very different from where I grew up with, you know, and obviously you had to start from definitely from the bottom up, and then, yes, we had to start grooming the horses, cleaning the horses, knowing everything about the horses, and we had to take care of the horses for the group ahead of us, and so we basically were grooming the horses for the students that were ahead of us, cleaning the horses, walking the horses for them. So we had no chance to get on the horses at all for about 6 months. So 6 months were about three months were just school. We didn't even see a horse. Basically, we just going to regular school. And then 3 months later, we started working in with the horses, like grooming and learning how to put bandages and cleaning stalls, walking the horses. And like I said before, you know, doing the job for the group that were ahead of us. So, yeah, we had to do all that and learn from scratch. I mean, yeah, that was all new for me.
Johnny, I know that you mentioned none of your other family members were really involved with racing, so it was a little bit different for you. But when you were inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2012, you, of course, thanked your mom, who was in attendance, but you also cited her as your number one supporter. But it wasn't necessarily like that in the beginning, was it?
No, not at all. I mean, I you know, I was a good student. I wasn't great either in school, but I was a good school, a good student. So she had high hopes for me to go on and do something out of myself, out of, you know, like every parent, a doctor, a lawyer, or something like that. I wanted to be an accountant, so I had something in mind that I could do something. But once I had, the talk with my mom and my dad. My dad was actually the one who convinced my dad, if he wants to do it, go ahead and let him do it. You know, he can always go back to school and do something if he doesn't work out. And that was the final thing that, you know, decided to let me out of the high school to go to the jockey school. And once we did that, she definitely was my number one supporter. I mean, it was totally different for me. I am a little tall, but, you know, back then, 16 years old, I was a little bit tall, and everybody thought that even the day that she actually went to school, high school with me to get all my credentials from high school to change the school to the high school, and the principal was there and says, like, you shouldn't do that with him. He's going to be too tall. He'll never make it, you know. My mom, from that day on, she said, like, oh, he's going to make it. He's going to do really well. And so that was the first introduction of somebody telling me that I was going to be too tall and I was not going to make it. I was going to be too heavy to be a jockey. My mom was determined that she was going to do the best to help me out, to keep my weight down. And she had definitely started doing two different meals for everyone, you know, for me and the rest of the family. So it was a year and a half of hard work and dedication. You know, I had to do, you know, a lot of things, you know, running 5 days a week, 6 days a week and dieting every day, you know. So it definitely took a whole year and a half to keep my weight at 104 pounds, 105 pounds. So it was really hard, but it showed me dedication, that what I needed to do and how to learn how to hit my weight in a certain level, it paid out.
Johnny, so how old were you when you rode your first race, and did you ride in Puerto Rico before coming to the United States?
Yeah, I was 18. You know, you had to be 18 in Puerto Rico before you ride your first race. So, yeah, I was in the jockey school for a year and a half, actually. And I turned 18 in November, so we graduated in December. So it was kind of that perfect thing that I graduated right when I was 18, so I was allowed to ride the races in January. And I rode two horses on my first day. They finished nowhere. And then the second day I rode, I was in three horses, and my first horse that I rode, I won. So, and The third horse I rode coming back after the race, I failed. So it was the first one to win a race and the first one to have a fall right after the races. So, yeah, so it was one of those things. One of the opposite now and the same day. You win your first race and then in the day, you know, the last horse I was riding, I had a fall. So you got the upside down right away in one day.
Wow, talk about learning those lessons very quickly. And that was the same year, Johnny, that you came to the United States, wasn't it? 1990?
Yeah, 1990. I rode in Puerto Rico until the 2 months that I rode there, January, February, and March. I only rode 2 days, I think it was. It was only 3 days in three racing days in Puerto Rico at the time. So I think I rode 2 days or 3 days on, and then I came here in March 13th. To New York, I went to New York in March 13, and March 14, I rode my first horse in New York, which yeah, actually I was second, and Angel Cordero beat me, and I was like, man, it was incredible. It was a great experience to come in and my first mount, and I get to finish second, and who beat me, Angel Cordero.
Wow, was that always your goal, even when you were going through the jockey school in Puerto Rico, to be a jockey here in the United States?
No, to tell you the truth, I mean, I learned all of that while I was in the jockey school, and then my agent, the guy actually who got me into the jockey school, he always thought that, you know, if you get an opportunity to go to the United States to ride, would I take it? I was like, yeah. I mean, you see, if I'm not doing it the way I think we should be doing in Puerto Rico, and if I get an opportunity, even if I was doing as well as they were expecting me to do, coming out of the school, let me go back a little bit. You know, I was working for the guy. One trainer was a really good trainer in Puerto Rico when I was in jockey school. So that when I had all the practice races, that we have practice races in the morning, then we move on to the practice races in the afternoon. I was doing really, really well in the practice. And then obviously I was working for a really good guy, and he was giving me really good mounts to do the practice races. So when I graduated, they were expecting a lot out of me, though, you know. Well, I was the first one who won a race, but I was the first one who fell as well. So that kind of took me back a couple of weeks, though, you know. And anyway, but my agent there always thought that if I had opportunity to come to the United States, would I take it? I was like, yeah, you know, it would be great, you know, to venture out and do something that I never thought about it, though, you know. And so yeah, but he told me if I get you to go to the United States, I want to do it the right way and want to send you to the right people. And sure enough, we met Angel Cordero in Puerto Rico when he went to buy some horses, and that was the opportunity to ask him, you know, to see if he had a chance to come with him to the United States. And first of all, he said no. He, you know, I didn't speak the language. I wasn't ready, very much ready. I only rode 2 months in Puerto Rico. Actually, by then, when he was in Puerto Rico, it was about a month and a half that I was riding. I only had won five races, and he says, but he only won five races. He's not a 5 pound bug, it was still a 10 pound bug. And there were about three guys in New York at the time. They were doing really, really well. And then he says, like, he doesn't speak the language. He got three bug boys in New York right now. They're doing really well. And he's cold. I've never been out of the country, out of Puerto Rico at all. So he's like, he had three strikes against him. But anyway, we gave him a tape of mine, those races that I had won in Puerto Rico, and he went back home in New York, and he was watching the races with a friend of his that was in vacation, Richie Allen, the ex-Bexpo player. And Richie says, man, this kid looks like he has some talent. And he says, like, yeah, he wants to come over here, but I don't have an agent for him. He doesn't speak the language. And he says, like, well, just bring it over. I'll be his agent. And he started laughing. He's like, you kidding? You never been an agent before? Yeah, but I'll be an agent for him. I'll do his job. And he called my agent in Puerto Rico to send me over. And the next week, I was in New York. It was one of those things that, you know, it just came through.
Johnny, that did have to be a big transition at 18 to go from Puerto Rico to New York in the cold weather. And how was that? You've mentioned Angel Cordero, and he sounds like he would have been a great mentor for you.
No, he was. I mean, and you know, the first thing when I got to New York, I mean, I was very lucky that I came to a home, to a family, and they actually treated me like I was one of their own family, though, you know, so I never felt a stranger or, you know, that I was out of place. So that was the first thing, though, you know. I was very lucky, you know, that I went to a home that it was a family, and it was I was well taken care of. The first thing we started watching races, and the first thing he says to me is like, well, first of all, forget about everything you learned in Puerto Rico, how you ride the horses. The basics, what you learned, it was very good, but we have to change it the way we do it here and the style of riding that we actually do here. So those are things that I started learning right away, and saving ground, and you know, learning the jockeys, learning the competition, learning the trainers that how the trainers like to you know, the way they train the horses, and the way they like to ride their own horses. So everybody has different ways to train horses and the way they like to run the horses. So those are things he always explained from the beginning, that it's very important to learn everybody different way that how to train the horses and how they like you to ride the horses. And learn the competition, in which is all the jockeys. It says learn from the best and learn from the ones that don't do very good either, because those are the ones that do make a lot of mistakes. You don't want to make those mistakes. So the less mistakes you make, the better it is. And those are things I learned right away. You know, so you have to put it to practice. You have to put it into your head and learn it. So it takes time. And I think it would have taken me a much longer time if I didn't have him, you know, telling me all those things and try to see the difference between one rider and the other ones. It was very important, definitely.
Talking with Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez on Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Johnny, when you came here, you mentioned not being able to speak the language, and I know that it wasn't necessarily Angel who helped you with that. I've heard you tell the story before. It was actually Angel's daughter. Tell me that story.
Yeah, this is the thing. Is when I came here, and I didn't speak any language. I mean, I knew words, but I couldn't speak it, you know, and very little words that I knew. And Angel's daughter, Canela, I think she was like 2 years old when I came in. Almost 2 years old, and all we did was watch The Little Mermaid. It's like, oh, you want to watch a movie? You want to watch a movie? And all we went to see every day was watch The Little Mermaid every day for I don't know how long I lived there. You know what? It did got me to listen to the music and listen to the words and start writing things down and looking at the dictionaries and catching up words and talking to her, you know, the little that she talk. And it was very cute, and she was every time we got home, she ran into me and ran to my lap and play with me. And she wanted her attention. It was very cute, but it got me into it right away, you know, that I needed to learn the language and talk to this little girl that needed the attention and wanted to play and watch movies. And that was my first, definitely my first introductions to it, so I could feel comfortable to talk to someone. So it was very good. It was very cute, and I'm glad that I had that experience with her.
Well, and I know things weren't always easy for you. That was certainly one of the major hurdles you had to overcome when you came to the States, and you mentioned the other challenges, but there was a time a couple of years into your stay here in the States, I guess 1992, when you actually considered going back home to Puerto Rico.
I did. I think that was one of the toughest times I had in my life. Just came back from an injury, and Angel Cordero had it retired. We had an injury early in January. And I came back, I don't know, 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later to start riding again. And with a new agent, we started working together and started very slow. And, you know, I didn't get back to how I was doing the year prior to that, which I was doing really well. I was rolling, and I got good customers and people that were riding me a lot. And when I came back with a new agent, things started changing, and things were not going very well. Then the summertime came in, and we went to Saratoga. And, you know, it's Saratoga, you know, obviously all the top trainers and top jockeys and everybody's there, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm not even riding in Saratoga, and then we end up splitting. My agent looked like I needed to go and, you know, look for somebody else and try to, you know, to get another agent. And that was tough, you know. I mean, it was really tough, you know, being in Saratoga in the middle of the summer and not having an agent. I you know, thankfully I did have my mom at the time. The house with me, and I was like, oh, we're going to have to pack up and leave. And he's like, I'm not even riding here. So he said, no, you're going to go back out there, get an agent, and you start working really hard and try to build your business back up again. And, you know, you got to give it a try before you make a decision that it's just going to pick up and go just because you're not doing well right here. And that's what I did. You know, I went out and I saw Ralph Darrow Senior, who had my my book when I had the bug. And I asked him, you know, and it's like, I asked Ralph, what are you doing now? So it's like, I'm not doing anything. So you have a, you know, you're working for someone. And he said, no. It's like, and I asked him if he wanted to work for me. And he turns around. And if you, anybody knew Ralph, and he has his cigar in his mouth, turns around and looks at me. It's like, when do I start? So, just whenever you start, you know, whenever you want. So like I said, I'll be right back. I'm going to go and get a book on the office. I mean, it was incredible. I mean, I was afraid to go and ask him just because I know we worked together and we separated went different ways just because part of the business. And not because an angel actually was running everything. Now that this is the first year I came here, and, you know, and he made the decision for me to change agent, you know, to another guy that was a friend of the Cruzares, who, you know, was riding all the horses for them. He says, like, you know, it's going to help you if you, you know, take this guy, and when you lose the buck, you know, this is the guy that's going to keep, you know, stay with you and move you up to the different levels. That way you don't have to leave New York, whatever, you know. So it was a little frustrating for me to go back and ask him. And actually, he was very gracious that I asked him. That's like, you know, what you didn't ask me before. It's like, well, I was kind of scared because you worked for me, and, you know, and we went, you know, apart back a couple of years back. And I said, no, I wasn't mad at all. You know, you had to do what you had to do back then, and that helped you to do what you need to do. And, but, you know, he was very, I mean, just very, no questions asked. When do I start, you know? And that, I like that about him, you know, and that kind of, you know, get my head up and start working again, and working with the clients that I was working all the time, and try to get some business back. And we left Saratoga, and back in Belmont, we started winning races. And by the time the winter came, I was rolling again. So, you know, it took me about a month and a half after started working with him and to get business going. And finally, we got it going. We got it going, quickly, and started getting business and started getting some nice horses. And that's how I stayed here. And I would have made the worst mistake in my life if I had left then on the summertime, definitely
Johnny. And just another example of the highs and lows of the business. And so when did Angel Cordero, when did he begin to become your agent?
That was not until 1998. Angel and I stayed together and very close since the day I got here anyway. And he went on to train horses. Actually, we did very well. He trained horses and me riding for him, so we did very well as when he was training horses. But before he started training, I did ask him to come to work for me, and he said, no, my dream was, you know, that once I stopped riding, I like to go and train horses. And I said, well, if it doesn't work out, you can always come and work for me. So he went on and trained horses, and then we did really well together. And then in 1997, he was losing horses. He didn't have that many horses. The owners that he had, you know, weren't giving that many horses back to him. And the business was going really, really slow. And I remember I came here on December 1997. He came down to buy some horses for a couple of clients of his, and things didn't work out. And my agent at the time, everybody was telling him that I was going to change agents. And to be honest with you, I not even think about it, that we were changing agents, because I had dinner with him. He came to buy some horses, and he never mentioned that he wanted to be an agent. But apparently he had said something to someone, and someone said something to my agent at the time, that when I was going back to New York, that Angel was going to take my book. And I was like, well, I'm not going to lie to you. If he wants to be an agent, and, you know, I'm going to let him do it, though, you know. And he says to me, so, well, you're going to have to call him now, and he's going to start, he has to start working for you now. I was like, well, I mean, we're here in Florida. I mean, he's not even asked me to be his agent, you know. So no, if he wants to be your agent, he's going to have to start here in Florida. So, okay, so he quit. So I call Angel up, and I said, well, I guess you would have to be an agent, because my agent right now, he just quit because somebody told him that you're going to be an agent when I go back to New York. So I need you to take a plane and come down to Florida and start working for me. And that's how I started in 1998. He came down here and started working for me, and then we haven't looked back.
Johnny, I loved your story about being afraid to ask Ralph Thoreau Sr. to be your agent back in the day. And people don't often think of John Velasquez in that manner. They don't often think of the Johnny V that was just struggling at one point and afraid to approach somebody even for that type of thing. What advice do you give to young riders when they approach you today?
Did they approach me?
Yeah.
I mean, an advice in what sense?
Yeah, what advice? I mean, you've been through the lows and you've had to overcome adversity. So when a young rider comes to John Velasquez today and says, Johnny, how can I get started in this game? What do I need to do? What do you tell them?
Well, I right now I'm dealing with a little kid here that came from Finger Lakes. And actually, I don't know, I met the kid just recently. My sister knows the kid very well. From Puerto Rico, and she was the one that put him in the jockey school in Puerto Rico, and I know the story. This is probably a story that I look myself, like everybody told me when I started out. Like, you know, the kid is a little tall, he's maybe a little heavy, and actually because he was a little heavy in school, they actually kicked him out of the school because he was a little overweight. I mean, 108 pounds in the school is really tough. Once you pass 108 pounds. And the school said that they do this random check weights in the school in Puerto Rico. So if you don't do the weight, obviously you out. So he was caught out, you know, in 109 pounds, 110 pounds a couple of times. So he was kicked out of the school, or you could continue the school to be an SSR rider. So the kid left. Actually, was kicked out of the school. And he went to Single Legs. He started working on his own, and he started galloping horses. And then he decided to ride races and Single Legs, and I didn't know anything about this. It's just very recently, and my sister called me. It's like, look, the kid is actually riding races in Single Legs, and then the first horse he rode, he won. The second horse he rode, he won. So one of those things that happened. So I just think that it's meant to be, though, you know. And finally, I got to talk to him, and I brought him down here. He won four races in Single Legs. I brought him to New York, and my things are like, this is your job. You choose to do this, so this is the things you need to do. You know, you need to be dedication. You wait, obviously, the way I did it. It was about a year and a half and a really strict diet that, you know, to keep your weight down. Same things that Angel told me. So once you start riding, learn your position. The jockeys, learn from the best and learn from the ones that don't do well, because that means they do make a lot of mistakes. Be friendly with everyone. Get to know the trainers, the assistant trainers. They're very important. You know, be friendly, be outgoing, and always look at the races. Watch the races, who wins, who doesn't win, the trainers. And when they win a race, make sure that you say congratulations. You know, they finish second or third. Make sure that, you know, that horse ran really well. You know, be friendly, be talkative, and sell yourself. You know, but you have to be very dedicated about what you do. Once you chose this for your living, obviously. So this is the things you have to be very dedicated and do the things that you need to do to be better. And weight is one of the problems that we actually do have everywhere, you know, and it's a big deal. So those things that you have to deal with, and you have to learn how to manage that, though. And if you have a talent, you have to use that talent and make sure that you're actually doing it the right way to keep your weight down. And you know what? And let's go out there and start working. You got to work hard for it. You know, you got to show your face. You got to show that you're hungry. You got to show that you are willing to learn and to listen. And those are things that you have to put up first. You know, and hopefully you get a little bit lucky that you can win a couple of races and people give you the chance that you deserve, if you have the talent that you need to do. So, you know, it's a lot of dedication and a lot of hard work first that you have to put up. I mean, you have to work all the time. I mean, I work all the time anyway. But, you know, especially when you're starting out, it's a lot of work, a lot of dedication to try to grow your business.
Yeah, there are very few jockeys who have been more dedicated.
It's definitely
a lot
of work.
Yeah, very few jockeys who have been more dedicated and worked harder than John Velasquez. We're going to continue this visit right after this short break. Stay with us on Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
HRRN has a new home on Sirius XM Radio. Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, the Brisnet.com call-in show, and the ExpressBet Weekend Stakes Preview Show can all be heard on their new channels, Sirius 220 and XM 206, and the Equine Forum, Saturdays 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern on Sirius 92 and XM 92, and always streaming live at horseracingradio.net. If it happens in horse racing, it happens on HRRN.
But California Chrome shines bright in the Kentucky Derby!
What a memorable Breeders' Cup Classic! It's a race for the ages!
Here's the wire, and it's a photo finish that goes to Toneland!
Wise Dan gets his head in front! The first $1 million race in Keeneland history!
Racing's biggest events are right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
If you haven't already made the Horse Racing Radio Network your home for thoroughbred racing action, then now is the time to visit horseracingradio.net. Check out our broadcast schedule to see where and when we will be bringing you the best in thoroughbred racing from the rail to your radio. As always, you can listen to our free live streaming anywhere in the world at horseracingradio.net. Also, make sure to follow us on our Twitter page at twitter.com/HRRN or on our fan page on Facebook. We'll bring all the best racing information to you with broadcast information, pictures from the track, and news updates as soon as we hear it. Remember, that's twitter.com/HRRN for all the updates as soon as we hear them. Don't miss out on all the action. Get in the game with Horse Racing Radio Network today at horseracingradio.net. That's horseracingradio.net.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia.
My name is Paco Lopez.
This is Jose Lescano.
This is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Shackleton, who still leads. Here's Nero on the outside, and Animal Kingdom is pouncing late on the John Velasquez. It's now Animal Kingdom on the outside who goes the lead for John Velasquez, and he's going clear by two lengths and running to the line. Animal Kingdom wins the Derby. Nero in second. In third came Mucho Macho Man. In fourth was Shackleford. And then Master of Hounds, Santiva, Brilliant Speed. And then Pants on Fire and Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion and John Velasquez who took Derby 1:37.
Mike Penna, Christina McManigal, back with you on Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, continuing our visit with Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez. And if you missed any portion of this show, you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, download a podcast at your leisure. It's on horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Of course, our past couple of shows are up there as well. Jock Talk with Mike Smith 2 weeks ago, and with Chris McCarron last week. You won't want to miss those. Do yourself a favor and go back and listen when you do get a second, and I promise you, you will enjoy it, as you will this continued visit with John Velasquez. And Johnny, I want to go back to something you said in the first half of the program where you talked about kind of struggling to get going in the early days of John Velasquez, and when you couldn't ride races at Saratoga. You just didn't have the business up there. And then all of a sudden, we fast forward to September 3rd, 2001, and here's Johnny V setting a Saratoga record with six wins on one card. Take me back to that day.
It's incredible, too. I've been very lucky to obviously having so much success, not having any success with Saratoga the first 2 years that I was there, but I was dedicated that, you know, that one day in Saratoga, I would do something really, really well, but, you know, and things happen. Then how things come to place, and then it's incredible because, I mean, probably the first day that I was in, like, 10 horses that day, so, you know, and everything just started, you know, piling up the right time, at the right moment, and it's funny because every winner that I had at that time, it was with all different trainers stuff. There was just one trainer. But anyway, just everything started piling up and going the right way. And by the time the sixth winner came, it was incredible. You know, it's like nobody had it done it in 100 and something years, whatever it is there was. So it was incredible just to have it. And that year, I remember, I didn't win the title either. So I was second in the title. So even though I won the six races in one day and did a record, I was so mad that I didn't get to win the title. But, you know, those things that you look back now and it's just like, you know what, I had to enjoy just that, that I did something special in Saratoga. So definitely one of those days, very special, that you didn't get to enjoy it at the moment just because you start thinking all the things. But, you know, now you look back, you see it's definitely something that I can look back and enjoy.
Johnny, we were there at Keeneland this past October when you also won five in a day. And tell us about how do you – riding is obviously a lot about confidence and – you know, you have to believe in yourself, I guess is a good way to say it. But how do you mentally prepare yourself to ride well?
You know, I do prepare myself every day the same way. You know, whether I think the horses don't look very good or horses look very good in the car, you know, so I do my homework every day. You know, I prepare myself really well. So when things happen out there, you can change it if you have to, or you got to be prepared for it. But, you know, obviously, the horses have to help you in everything you do. So when you have the opportunity that the horses are helping you and everything comes in place, all your homework comes into place and everything that you have to change at the time on that particular race, that particular surface, whatever it may be, or that particular horse, and everything starts coming in place, it's so slow. You see everything so easier, if you will. You know, it's just everything comes into place. And it's incredible when you get to feel like that. It's incredible when you get to feel the horses, and incredible when you start changing things and it just happens. So it's incredible. But I think preparation every day is what's important. You know, you prepare yourself every day, you'll be more consistent than anything else. So, you know, I'd rather be prepared for anything that is going to happen in the race, even if it doesn't happen because the horse didn't help you or something happened in the race. And then things that you can't change it because you can't change it. But if you prepare yourself and you have the opportunity that the horses responded to you, I mean, it's the best feeling in the world.
I love listening to you talk about the day you won six at Saratoga, and it was kind of somewhat bittersweet. You couldn't really enjoy it because you wanted to win the rider title so badly. And it's a lot like any professional athlete. A guy like Ben Roethlisberger will go out and throw six touchdown passes in a game, but after the game, we'll be talking about the one pass that he missed when the guy was wide open. And great athletes are never satisfied, much like you. How much do those riding titles mean to jockeys, Johnny?
It means a lot, though. You know, those are things, especially the Saratoga one. But, you know, everybody's thinking about Saratoga. It doesn't matter where you are. I just throw in Saratoga because it's special to me, because it was this place that this is where I had the most hard time, you know, to break in and to be successful at it. So that's where I'm going for it. Any meet and anywhere is important to a jockey, though, you know, especially because it opens door to ride better horses, better races. And it's important wherever it is, so, you know, whether it's New York, Florida, Maryland, Kentucky, wherever you are, you know. I just think this, I thought that was important for me because it was so hard for me to break through. And knowing how Angel did so well in in Saratoga. So I had that with me. It's like, you know, Angel did so well. He won 13 titles, 11 back-to-back. So I need to feel like I need to win the title and do well in Saratoga and put my name in somewhere in Saratoga that was special that the way Angel did, though, you know. And it worked differently for me than Angel, obviously, but I mean, it's the place that I always enjoy going and be very competitive. And it seems to me that I got to prepare myself better when I go there.
Johnny, you also broke another record at Saratoga last year. You broke the all-time wins record, which was 694 at the time. Obviously, now it's higher, but how was that?
That is, and again, another special thing, you know, to get it done. And being around Angel for so long and then being around with Jerry Bailey for so long, you know, and having so much respect for those two guys, and obviously seeing Jerry develop his career when I got here in 1990, and Jerry was already doing well enough, but he was not the top jockey at the time. By the time 1995 came in, that's when he breakthrough came in, and Jerry Bailey was the jockey in the world. Seeing that transition from one to another one, and seeing it and how he did in Saratoga, and now for me to break, you know, those two guys' records is incredible. You know, I never thought about it, you know, but I guess determination and hard work and preparation, you know, and continue doing the best job you can do it day in, day out, and getting to pass these two guys, that's incredible. I mean, I look back now and say, like, wow, these are two guys that you look up, you know, for so many years, being in New York, it's incredible just to be part of it, you know.
Talking with Hall of Famer John Velasquez on Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Johnny, if you go to the Jockeys Guild website and you look at the John Velasquez profile there, your greatest achievement is winning the 2011 Kentucky Derby with Animal Kingdom. Now, that was your 13th try at the Derby. And the way that this story unfolded, I guess you just never know how things are going to work out.
That's right. You never know. I mean, it was 3 years back-to-back that I was supposed to be having the favor going to the Kentucky Derby. And none of the three horses made the Derby. And that third year, obviously, I was on the favor, co-favor, and my horse scratched. I think it was on Tuesday or Wednesday or that week, and Robbie Alvarado had an accident on Wednesday, and then he didn't ride on Thursday, Friday, and the connections with the Animal Kingdom thought if he didn't ride on Friday that they were going to make a change, because they didn't think he was going to good enough to qualify. If he didn't ride on Friday, they make a change on Saturday, because he didn't think they were going to be good enough to go and ride on Saturday. They came in and talked to me about it, and actually, you know, feel, you know, really bad for Robbie. And it's like, well, I don't know, whatever you guys want to do. I mean, I'm going to be open. So you guys want to make a change, go ahead. And I'm talking to Grant Morton, being a friend of mine. And I told him that, you know, if he was doing this just because we're friends, not to do it, because I, you know, I just feel more comfortable if he's going to do it. And he told me, no, they just want to do this change, and I want to do it. If I'm going to change it, I want you to ride the horse. And one of those things, I guess when it's meant to be, it's meant to be. It's just, you know, one of the things that happens in life. And to be part of it, and to, you know, with such a long career, if you will, that I've been having so far, and not winning the Derby, missing that kind of race, you know, it was missing. It was definitely missing that, you know, being there successful and everything else and not winning the Derby. It was one of the races that you kind of try for, you know, to win a race like that. And not having it was definitely, it was bothering me. It was really bothering me. And now that they actually, you want it, and you feel like you've done something in your career and it's complete. Now that it's over, but it's actually one of your dreams come through. And even it was my 13th try. It doesn't matter how many times you try, but even if you win it once, at least it's done. You know, it's a book that I can say, all right, you know, I have that one in my list that I can say I won it.
Yeah, and of course, the horse you were supposed to ride, the scratch, was Uncle Mo. You mentioned him most likely being the favorite that year, and he is trained, was trained by Todd Pletcher, who has been extremely supportive to you. Tell me about that relationship with Todd and how that came about.
Well, this started back in, I mean, I knew Todd when he was training, when he was assistant trainer with Wayne Lucas back in the 90s. when he went on his own, he started training horses, and I was riding a horse here and there for him. He didn't have that many horses, but you know, Pade and Mike Smith was riding most of the horses, and when it was not Pade and Mike Smith, it was Mike Smith and Jerry Bailey. 1998, I think it was 1999, I was riding a horse for Wayne Lucas. Let me back up a little bit because Angel keep talking to him, and it's just like, look, I got the young rider. He's probably going to be the champion rider and the future champion rider, and you are the future trainer, you know, champion trainer that I think you guys should be, you know, getting together. And that conversation went on and on and on, I don't know how many times, but Tad was getting, you know, more horses and was doing better and better and getting bigger and bigger. In 1999, I think it was the year I was riding, I broke a maiden for Wayne Lucas and a horse, a filly that was going to a stake. Then they fell in a race. So Tad went to Angel, asked him, like, who are you riding in this race? And Angel said to him, so, well, I'm riding Wayne Lucas. And he says, no, he's not. You're not, because Jerry Bailey just got off my horse. He's going to ride that horse. And he says, no, I have a call with that horse. And Tad said, no, you don't. So go and check. So he went and checked with Wayne Lucas, and Wayne Lucas told him that, yeah, why he would have had me on the horse when Jerry Bailey was going to be open. So Angel went back to Tad Fletcher and so, well, I guess he's going to ride the horse. He's riding yours. So, well, if you want it, you can have it. So that's what happened. You know, and that from that day on, you know, I got on the horse. The horse won, beating Lucas' horse. And, you know, that kind of opened the doors completely for me that, you know, that I was going to be available more times than Jerry Bailey was going to be or Mike Smith. And that opened the door for me to, you know, to ride more horses for him. And then from then on, you know, obviously, he got bigger and bigger and more horses and more races. And, you know, the connection is there. The connection and the trust is there, and he can trust me. I can trust him, you know, and I think that it has worked for these many years, but, you know, so that we can communicate with one another. And when we have to change things, it changes. And the races, and when those don't happen, it doesn't happen. I can come back and say, so, you know, I think I messed up this one. And, you know, the trust is there that I can come back and say, like, you know, that things really mess this one up and feel comfortable enough that, you know, I can talk to him like that.
Johnny, and I first met you whenever I was galloping horses for Tad Fletcher back in the day, and was always in awe to be working horses alongside you and company. And but how was that in 2007 to win the Belmont with Rags to Riches for Tad?
And that's another thing, you know, I didn't ride her at all. You know, that's my first time I rode it. You know, Gary Gomez was on her, I think, the whole career. And then he committed himself going into the Belmont. Obviously, you know, holds it and feel it. So he didn't think that probably they were going to run in there. And at the last minute, they decided to run her in the Belmont. And I picked her up for the Belmont. It was incredible, you know, and things that she did. I mean, and beat the horses that she beat that day. I mean, it was incredible. You know, I know the thing that you never think it was going to happen. She breaks out of the gate. She falls on her face. She gets up, and she had to go wide the whole way around. And then she had to put a fight with Crawling. Not only that, you know, one of the best horses of the 3 year olds at the time, but he became the best horse of the year the following year. For her to do that, it was incredible. You know, for me, it was a dream come true. You know, and get to win the Belmont. Obviously, I know that dream come true and winning the Belmont and my home, where I actually think it's my home, that, you know, that where my career developed, and not winning the Belmont when another race I was missing. So it was incredible. Definitely having it get that done out of the way as well. It's very gratifying.
Finish this sentence for me, Johnny. When I stop and look back on my career, the one thing I'm most proud of is?
Oh, my God. That's hard to say, though, you know. That's really hard. The one thing that I'm most proud of, I have to say, all of it, you know, and the upside downs of it, of the business and trying to stay focused and keep at it, though, you know. I think that's probably the hardest part, though, you know. I think people think that easiest way to get to a level where you are right now, you know, that you're at this really high level and high and riding the top horses, top everything that, but you know, to, I think the most proud, the most, I have to say the most proud of it is staying in the level that I am and keep it for this long. Definitely.
Well, I can tell you, just sharing my own personal John Velasquez story here for just a moment, if you'll indulge me. Johnny, I can remember in 2006 when we were just getting started with the network and we were making our first trip to Florida to Gulfstream Park for the Don Handicap. And it, nobody knew what we were doing on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Nobody had ever heard of it because it was brand new. And I was kind of like you were in the beginning, where you were a bit nervous to go up and talk to different agents and different people. I was very much the same way. And I remember walking into the jocks room to talk to Victor, who handles the jocks room duties. And I remember meeting you, and you were so gracious, and you took me up to introduce me to Javier Castellano and so many of the different jockeys, and I explained to you what I was doing, and I had your support from day one. And when I think about John Velasquez's career, and what I would be most proud of is the way that you've handled yourself outside of the saddle, and you've always treated everybody, myself included, with absolute dignity, and you never once made me feel like I was going to be somebody that didn't belong. And to me, that's, if I were you, that's what I would be most proud of, my friend.
Ah, thank you. Thank you. You know, well, that's the thing. I think that's the quality that you have in life, though. You know, I think being humble in anything you do, though, you know, it doesn't matter how high or how low you go, you still have to be the same person, though, you know, and I think it's the quality of life that I learned, and I'll always be the same way, though. And you know what? And meeting people and getting to other people is exciting, this business. And someone who comes with an idea with the radio that is going to bring awareness about our business, there is going to be something for horse racing and make it out there. So like, it has to be welcomed, though, you know. And I think you're doing a great job. And I'm glad that you asked me to be on your show. I'm glad that you asked me that day, you know, to introduce yourself and the name of the guys and introduce the other guys, because, you know, this is part of the business. For us to continue to do in the business that we're doing, we need more of this. We need more awareness that our business is still here. Our business need more promotions, need to be new fans and new people to come in. And young people, you're a very young guy coming in to do a radio show. I mean, I my hat's out to you that you started now very young and doing the job that you're doing right now for a new radio show, I should say. You're doing a great job in promoting racing. I think that we need more of that, definitely.
Yeah, well, thank you. You were there from the beginning. I appreciate that.
And as Mike said, your involvement outside of the saddle is incredible. And what you do with the Jockeys Guild and the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, I mean, that's awesome. You've been hurt multiple times with major injuries, so you know how that is. And for those guys who can't ride again, I'm so thankful for what you do for that.
Oh, thank you. You know, and this is part of giving back, actually. I've been very successful and very lucky and very blessed that I, you know, every time I've been hurt, I've been back in the saddle and continue my work. But I think that's another thing that we need to, I mean, that's part of my job, I should say, and part of my giving back to those who actually support this game and come in and get hurt. And we need to support them as well, though, you know, because without anyone, I mean, we need everyone in this business, and especially those guys that came in and didn't get to ride much or did ride a lot, though, you know. But to get hurt in the racetrack and not having anything to survive and or their families, I mean, it's incredible that this is 2014, the end of 2014, and we still don't have guaranteed funding for these guys. That bothers me. That's part of my job, that's still trying to promote it and try to get something there, be heard. Maybe we can fix this problem that, you know, these people that come in and get hurt in the racetrack and not having any support. And we have to go out there and do fundraisings to give them $1,000 a month to these guys and try to help them in medications and wheelchairs, rent for the houses and stuff like that. And we still don't have guaranteed funding. It's sad. It's really sad. I mean, this has to stop. And I think raising our voices and continual awareness, we need to fix that problem. And I think we're getting closer, but we're not there yet. So, you know, I think we need that guaranteed funding for these guys, and it's necessary for all these people and families who are very hurt, and the kids obviously not having anything to do with, you know, well, the families not earning anything to support these kids. So they need some help, definitely.
John Velasquez on Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Johnny, with all the wins that you've been part of and the record number of earnings for a jockey, more than $318 million, what is it that still drives and motivates John Velasquez?
I think it's still wanting to do what you do best, you know, and I think this is where I do best, riding horses, and this is where I chose as a career, you know, and I'd love to do it for a few more years and, to, you know, healthy enough and strong enough to compete. I think the competition is what bring you back more, and the taste of good horses and good races. It's just still in me, though, you know, until you don't want it, then you say, so if I don't want it, you know, then I can say, okay, I can sit back and look back and had a great career. You know, still hungry for that next big race and that next big horse and that, you know, that feeling that you're doing something and being competitive, you know, and I think that's what drives you to continue doing what you love, what you love, you know, and I think if you love it and you still have that passion for it, I think you, and I'm doing it well, that I'm not struggling, you know, the day that I start struggling to get in those mounts and get into those races, and then I think that would be the time that I say, well, it's time for me to, you know, to hang my boots, if you will.
Yeah. You have a young son and a young daughter. What if they come to you and they say, Daddy, I want to be a jockey? What are you going to tell them?
Well, I'm going to support them in anything they want to do. You know, it's that's the thing that, you know, once anybody gets something in the head, I look at myself, and when I got that into my head, I wanted to be a jockey. And I went to my mom and I said, I wanted to be a jockey. And she definitely didn't support it at first. But once she knew that I was serious about what I wanted to do, and she supported me 100% in what I wanted to do, so I wanted to support them whatever they wanted to do. The one thing I do ask to my kids is, say, well, anything is cool, and then whatever you want to do afterwards, it's you know, I support it 100%. But definitely having an education is very important in this life, and I think that the education should be first, and then they can do whatever they want.
Johnny, this has really been amazing to hear your story and so many of the background stories that are associated with your Hall of Fame career, and we're down to just a couple of minutes left. This hour has really flown by. I always like to kind of end these interviews by letting listeners know something that maybe they don't know about the riders on a personal level. So when you're not involved with riding races and you do get some downtime with the family or whatever it might be, what other hobbies does John Velasquez have?
That's the thing. I don't have any hobbies, basically. You know, I spend time doing basically nothing in the house, and what I do something, it'll be something that I'm interested in, or I read something that financials or the stock market or something that is going to entertain me or educate me, if you will. And that's what I like to do. I educate myself and all the things that had nothing to do with racing. And that's what I like to do. Educate myself, learn all the things outside racing that one day maybe I can use it and do something else when I'm not racing. So, you know, so then that's what I do. I educate myself and learn all the things, and especially in financial aspects of it, you know, that I can help others. And maybe do something else later on when I retire.
So, I guess if I had $318 million in purses, I'd probably want to study the financials too, wouldn't you, Christina?
I would.
Yeah, but I wish I made that money.
Yeah, right.
Well,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
Don't make that money.
It's the horses, not you.
Horse made that money.
Johnny V here on Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Johnny, as always, you're a class act, a great ambassador for the sport. And we'll do everything we can to keep getting the word out on the Jockeys Guild and the PDJF and keep trying to do everything we can to benefit those who give back. And I know you do that more than most. And I really do appreciate everything you've done for me and everything you've done for the show by appearing here tonight. Thanks so much.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
All right. John Velasquez on Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And, well, you think about these past 3 weeks, Christina, and just getting this particular new show off the ground here. And
we're just getting started.
Yeah. I mean, Mike Smith, Chris McCarron, John Velasquez, and the stories that they were able to tell us.
They all have such great stories, all they've accomplished. And tune in next week for more.
Tune in next week for more. Every Tuesday, 6 o'clock Eastern. If you missed any portion of these shows, again, go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. You can download all of our shows and check them out, really. You won't be disappointed. I know you're going to enjoy them. Been fun.
Oh, yeah.
All right. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Christina McManigal, I am Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time on Jock Talk on HRN.